Okay, Boker Tov, good morning, everybody. Apologies for the slightly late start due to the weather and the road conditions, and also for the slight change of venue. And what's that? That I actually have one more here. Okay, would you like this? Okay, just pass this over, please. Thank you very much. So we have a Shinui Mokum, a little bit of a different scenery today. I assume they're doing some work downstairs, and we'll end up back in there soon. So we're better off here without the banging and the noise. So thank you everybody for coming. This is the final installment of our little mini-series that we're dealing with Tumah and Tahara issues. We dealt last week and the week before with the issue of the Kohanim flying on the plane and whether they have an issue with the body in the plane or flying over the graveyard, over the cemeteries. One matter actually that I didn't mention last week that I read about subsequently over the last few days, which is also a modern-day application of this, is these days there are very few flights that you get where you walk down a flight of stairs off the plane and then you walk across the tarmac. Almost every flight these days, certainly Ben-Gurion, they attach a jet bridge to the plane when the plane lands. And of course, this is another factor, which we didn't talk about last week, which if indeed there is a problem with the mate being on the plane and the plane being a place which retains that tour, the minute you attach the jet bridge to the plane, then not only the plane, but then the entire airport becomes an issue for the Kohanim. This is actually, if you think about it, a very major issue. And what they do is, if there is a mate on the plane, they sometimes delay a little bit before they attach the jet bridge, and they get the mate off the plane, and then they attach the jet bridge. And I don't know when, sometimes there's a delay, sometimes there isn't. Maybe that's the factor, but it's, if you think about it, it's a very significant issue, because all the Kohanim in the airport are then affected as well. Yes. Good, but the question is, are the people coming off the plane at the same time as that? Is it still on when they attach the bridge? Anyway, I don't want to get back into the whole aeroplane mode, but we are talking today about something a little bit different, which I think is very, perhaps more practical for many people, which is Kohanim as doctors, training to be doctors, and Kohanim going into hospitals. And this will be the last installment next week and the week after. I'd like to get onto different topics. Maybe we'll talk a bit about that at the end. Let's just recap with how this Tumah and Tahara system works, and that will help us understand the issue of hospitals and doctors. There are three ways in which Tumah can be transmitted, and therefore which a Kohen is not allowed to come into contact with a dead body. They are either Maga, where the Kohen touches the human remains with his hands, or they're Masa, where the Kohen lifts or causes the mace to move in some way. If you imagine that there's a mace on a boat, and a Kohen, a small boat, and the Kohen steps into the boat, and the whole boat goes up and down, that will be an issue of masa, and obviously carrying a casket, even though they're not touching the mace, they're carrying the corpse itself. And then there's ohel, which we talked about in some depth, which we'll talk more about, which is where a Kohen is under the same roof structure as a mace, or a Kohen leans over the mace, or the mace passes over the Kohen. Now, hospitals are obviously places where there are, unfortunately, quite a lot of bodies, and this gives rise to a number of halakhic questions. May a Kohen visit relatives and friends in a hospital when it is very likely that there will be mason in the hospital? That's quite normal. There are not only mason, but there are other human remains of different types, limbs and other sources, aborted fetuses, various different things which the Kohen may have to be conscious of. Are they allowed to go into a hospital and visit people when there is a chance that that will be a problem of Tumat Met? Are they allowed to check themselves into the hospital? Now, obviously, if the Kohen is having a serious life-threatening issue, there's nothing to talk about. Tumat Met, like almost all other halachic issues, will be overridden by Pikuach Nefesh. We'll talk a bit more about Pikuach Nefesh soon. But often you check into hospital for things which are not Pikuach Nefesh. What if the Kohen has a scheduled operation for an ingrowing toenail to be a little minor procedure? And they say, well, you can come to the hospital and have it done next week, or you can book into a clinic, which is not a hospital, but you'll have to wait three weeks or so. Does the Kohen turn around and say, well, you know, I can't go in the hospital, I'll wait for another couple of weeks, I'll walk around in pain, or not? This can be a real question that the Kohen might have to face. So let's have a look at some of the sources on these issues. Let's start with number one. The one saving grace which most Kohanim rely upon, certainly in Chutz La'aretz, is that the vast majority of the dead bodies in a hospital in Chutz La'aretz are not Jewish bodies. And there is a very major debate in the halacha as to whether the body of a non-Jew generates the same level of tumah as the body of a Jew. And even when it comes to masa and maga, meaning touching the body and carrying the body, so Paskin like the opinions that there is a problem of tumah mate, even though there is one opinion, we'll get to it later, where that says there is not. We paskin that there is an equal problem of tumah mate touching a non-Jewish body, carrying a non-Jewish body. When it comes to ohel, then the Shulchan Aruch rules like the opinion that says there is not. Look at number one. Kibrei Oidei Kochavim. The graves of non-Jewish people. Nechon li yizaher ha-kohen mileilech aleihem. It is better for the Kohen to be careful not to walk over those graves. Says the Ramah, afal pi sheyesh meikilim. Even though he says you should know that when it comes to a non-Jewish grave and non-Jewish bodies being in an ohel, there are lenient opinions. It's appropriate to be machmir. And that is how the modern-day poskim rule on this. So where possible, the Kohen should avoid being in a place where he's in a situation of an ohel with a non-Jewish corpse. But nevertheless, in many situations, it is possible to be lenient. And therefore, on that basis, many Kohenim are lenient when it comes to going into hospitals in Chutz La'aretz, where clearly the vast majority of the people there are non-Jews. And that's indeed what Rav Moshe Feinstein says. Look, please, with me, number two. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva from 1964. The hospital, in Mutta, is it allowed to go to a hospital if you're a Kohen? And he says, Hine, when it comes to any limbs or bodies that are in a hospital, you go according to the majority. Most of them belong to non-Jewish people. Apart from the fact that in our countries, in America, the vast majority of people are non-Jews, even though when you walk around Brooklyn, it doesn't always feel that way. And nevertheless, the majority non-Jews, the midah merubah in a very significant way. Not only that, but most Jewish people, even when there are Jews, they do not permit autopsies. So there are less likely to be Jewish bodies in the hospital. And without permission from the family, and since you cannot perform an autopsy in America, or at least you couldn't in 1964, I don't know what the laws are now, without the permission of the family, I assume it remains the case today, he says, you don't have to worry that there are so many Jewish bodies around. And he says, and even when there are situations where the family, a Jewish family, does allow an autopsy, they always stipulate that if there's an autopsy, the body has to be removed as quickly as possible after the autopsy. Things aren't left lying around. There is a tiny minority, the Rishei Yisrael, of people who do not follow halacha, that will even allow them to keep the body for anatomy or medical research. He says, that's not something the Jewish people usually do, and I think that's still true very much today. So you can certainly rely on the rov, and therefore he follows the Shulchan Aruch, that me'ikah hadin, according to the strict letter of the law, there is no halachic problem of a Kohen being in an ohel with a non-Jewish mace. Even though they should try to avoid it, it is certainly better not to. He says you can rely on that. The tzarech gadol, and therefore he's not just going to allow a Kohen for anything, but for a tzarech gadol, this is in Chutz La'aretz, you're allowed, if there's a need, a significant need, to go to visit people in hospital. Now, he's not talking here about a Kohen having their own procedure. We'll deal with that soon. But you can go visit people. If there's a serious need, people are very upset. When the Chole is his father, or Benoy, or his son, or because of Shalom Mishpacha, where it's his wife's family. Okay, you've got to... Okay. I don't know if there's any, you know, backstory there, whatever, but you've got to keep the family happy, so you've got to visit the in-laws, whatever. All the more so if your own wife, God forbid, is ill, for who, inyan shalom bayit ukedoma. And therefore he says that For those kind of issues, shalom bayis, shalom mishpacha, tzar gadol, you can rely on certainly the opinions that say, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that a non-Jewish mace is not going to cause your problem. Aval, yivarer, masha efshay, you have to try and check, shashay efshaloi, im yesham after mace Yisrael, is there indeed a Jewish body there? And if you're not able to check, you can assume it's not a problem. The Bellevue Hospital, even great big hospitals like Bellevue Hospital, there are always bodies in a hospital that size, because of the number of people who are there. Nevertheless, the Jewish sick, hey, miut, they are still the minority, even in Bellevue Hospital, the Eshvismoch, Kishi'iyev, Shilavarev, Ashikhali Yisraelheim, and you can, if you can't check, you can assume that they're not Jewish bodies, Meroiva Cholim, Lachaim, or Lemaitim, hey, Me'anochrim, etc. And therefore he says, you're allowed to go into a non-Jewish hospital in Chutzlaret, and that is what Kohenim rely on when they need to go and visit. There's another reason to be lenient, perhaps, which is the opinion of the Shach. Look at the Shach in number 3. The Shach says here, the Dafke imhu ba'oil hameis, nirash dafke naka ba'oil hameis. Only when the Kohen is mamash in the oil hameis, in the room with the body. Okay? Aval im ba'batim hasmuchim lebay shehameis b'socho. But if the Kohen is in one of the adjoining rooms, or down a corridor, or around the corner, afal pisha hein gam came to meim, even though, yes, tumma does spread. And we'll talk about how that spread happens. It's actually fascinating how tumah does spread. He says, there's no question that tumah will spread down the corridors into the other rooms. And that's important for us. It could be that on a Torah level, says the Shach, the Kohen only has a problem when he's mamash in the room. And on a rabbinic level, the tumah will spread and the Kohen will be affected otherwise. Now, most people do not follow this Shach. Most people hold that even on a Torah level, the tumah will spread to other adjoining rooms and corridors. More about that soon. But this is just another factor to take into account. Maybe one can, certainly in a non-Jewish hospital, rely on the Shach, that if there is an issue, it's tumah drabbanon. And with tumah drabbanon, there's another reason. For certain purposes, the Kohen can be lenient. There's a very interesting Gemara, number 4. I'll tell you a fascinating application of this in a second. But number 4 is quite a famous Gemara, Tashma, the Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. Batonik, who is a Kohen, he gives testimony, Medalgin Hayinu Al Gabi Aronis Shel Mason. He tells, when we were kids, when we were young, we used to skip over the graves in the graveyard. So he's a Kohen. They used to kind of jump over them. Likrak Malchei Yisrael, to go and see the Jewish kings, the Jewish leaders. V'loy Likrak Malchei Yisrael Bilvad, and not only Jewish kings, Amr, did they say you can skip over the grave, El Afilu Likrak Malchei Umat Ha'olam. Even to go see a non-Jewish king, non-Jewish royalty, why? What's the mitzvah? To be even, the Chazal even allowed them to skip over the graves, even if they were Kohenim, to run to see a non-Jewish king. Shame Yitzke, because if you merit, Yavchin ber Malchi Yisrael and Malchi Umas Olam, and you merit to see Mashiach, you'll see the difference between when Mashiach comes, the amount of grandeur and splendor, even compared to the non-Jewish king, meaning it's Kedai, he says, to go to Buckingham Palace, to see Buckingham Palace, because then when you see what happens when Mashiach comes, Chazal say, then you'll be able to say, wow, I went to Buckingham Palace, but that's nothing compared to what's going on now. This actually, by the way, before we get into the final bit, which is relevant to us, this came up in London many, many years ago, when Princess Diana was buried, which is, I think, 20 years ago this year. She was buried on Shabbat. The funeral cortege came through Hendon, which was the Jewish community there, or one of the Jewish communities, on Hendon. There was a big debate between the Rabbonim of the time. Should the Jews go to the funeral procession, or should they not go to the funeral procession? So some of the Rabbonim in the community said, what are you talking about? It's Shabbos. You don't go to a Leviah on Shabbos. No, it's okay, so don't sing Zmiris in the street. People are in mourning for Nebuch, you know. But you don't go to the Leviah. And other Rabbonim said, absolutely, you do go. You should go to and watch, and not just Darchei Shalom, which is a fact. In fact, maybe they'll see the Jewish community giving respect, but they quoted this Gemara. I remember I heard this Gemara quoted, that it's actually to see a royal funeral, a royal cortege, maybe even something of a mitzvah to go, and even though it's Shabbos, this was debated at the time. Anyway, the point for us is, why were they skipping over the graves at all? What's going on? Cohen and skipping over the graves? So the Gemara says at the end, am I? The end of the second line. How can they do this? Lema, why don't we say, ein chokhma, the ein tzvun, the ein etzelen agir Hashem? Meaning you can't rationalize away mitzvahs. If it's also, it's also. You know, somebody gives you a plate of tray for food, and they're going to get offended if you don't eat it. You can't eat it. You say, look, I'm really sorry. I don't want to offend you, but I can't eat it. So you can't go to, you can't skip over the graves. What's going on? So the Gemara says, no. Could Rava. This follows the opinion of Rava. Dama Rava, Dvar Taira, Oil Sheyesh Bochal Al Tefach. If there is a tefach above the mace, between the mace and the top of the coffin, the casket, Chaytseitz Bipnei HaTumah, then that actually blocks in the Tumah. Sheyesh Bochal Al Tefach, if there is no gap between the body and the coffin, Eina Chaytseitz Bipnei HaTumah. Varoi Varoina Sheyesh Behem Chal Al Tefach. Since most coffins do have this gap, they are basically not prohibited in the same way. The rabbis made a gezeira of rabbinic tumah across the board that even whether the coffin does, whether the coffin doesn't, all coffins are tameh, durabanan, or mishum kvod malachim. But because the rabbis introduced that, they can relax that. Because of a covet for the kings, loy gazru behem rabbanan. So here you see this as an interesting example where you end up with a rabbinic tumah or a rabbinic anything. In certain circumstances, the rabbis introduced it. Hey mamru, behem mamru. They brought it in. They can tell you when you're allowed to be lenient with it. And so in this case also, if you can find a way of establishing that the tumah is maybe rabbinic, then that is going to give you some element of leniency as well. This is true, by the way, of other issues too. Let's just go through a few practical issues. In Chutz La'aretz, obviously there are other reasons to be lenient. There are other factors too. Can we say that the way that the hospitals are constructed in Chutz La'aretz is a little bit different? What do I mean? For example, there are regulations, fire regulations in Chutz La'aretz, that all fire doors have to be closed and may never be opened. And this is helpful for the Kohanim because it can block the Tumah in different ways. Now in Israel, apart from the fact that there are Jewish people, a lot more Jewish people in the hospitals, therefore Jewish mason, do we not have fire regulations? Yes. Well, we do, but people don't always follow them. So they prop the doors open and there are this and there's that. So in Israel, sometimes it's not as easy to rely on that. In Canada, for example, there are regulations, or there used to be, that hospitals may not have windows which open. All windows have to be non-openable windows. It's to prevent insects from flying in and spreading disease. And that also helps us when it comes to tumah, because one of the problems we'll see when it comes to tumah are people who open a window. Oi, you might have just spread the tumah all over the place in ways that we will see soon as well. Also, there's an issue with door hinges. More about that later. But there are reasons to be lenient in certain situations in Chutz La'aretz. Also, can we turn around and say, it's a suffix, we're not sure, in a public domain. Can we start making multiple tzveikot? Maybe the Kohen's not a Kohen. We talked about that last week, etc., etc. Now, when it comes to Kohenim who are already doctors, it goes without saying that Kohenim who are doctors are allowed to go into hospitals, because they have to go into hospitals to treat people, certainly when it comes to life-threatening illnesses. Most poskim say that Kohenim who are doctors can also go into hospitals even if they're not going to treat life-threatening illnesses, because you never know, they're there in case there is a life-threatening illness. Some poskim are more stringent and says they should get someone else to go in, but I think most poskim, as far as I'm aware, once the doctor's already a doctor, then obviously they can walk in and out of the hospital. Now, Shari Tzedek, we'll come to soon, is designed in such a way as to be Kohen-friendly. We'll talk about how that works and how they do that. Now, one problem that people may not have thought of is the curious case of the pregnant Kohenet. And I know that sounds worthy of Arthur Conan Doyle in some cases, as the curious case of the pregnant Kohenet. But what does a Kohenet do, a woman, an Ashes Kohen, a wife of a Kohen, what does she do if she needs to have a baby? So you'll answer, well, she goes to the hospital and has a baby. The question is she allowed to go into a hospital? Let's assume now we're in Eretz Yisrael, where there is more of a problem, Jewish mason, etc., and it's not so Cohen-friendly. Can she go into hospital and have a baby? Well, why not? Because if she has a little boy, the minute the baby is born, the baby will become Tame, and he's a male Cohen who's not allowed to become Tame. Is that her problem? The answer is yes, it might be. Look at number 5. Tashma, the Gemara says in Yevamos, the Pasuk telling the Kohenim not to become Tameh gives a double language. It says, tell them twice. It says, Tashma, emor, say El Kohen in Bnei Aaron, Ve'amarta Alehem. Say to them and say to them. Why say to them twice? So say to them, the first one is, you're not allowed to be called Tamei, and says that Gemara here, Lizayer, Lahavhir HaGedolim, sorry, to tell those who are adults, to warn them, Alakatanim, about the children. And from this, it's actually very clear that you're not allowed to even take a child, male Kohen, even below the age of Chinuch, you're not allowed to take them into a place which is Tamei. Now, someone above the age of Chinuch, obviously there's a Chinuch imperative to teach the kid, look, you're a Kohen, you're not allowed to do that. But below the age of Chinuch, there's also an issue too. Look at what the Mishnah Berurah says. To bring a Kohen male child into a place where there is tumah, or for that matter, to give them any other issa. Would you give a child tray food? Would you feed a young Jewish child pork? You wouldn't. Why? They're not an adult. They're not chayav. That's not the point. You're not allowed to feed them issa. So he says, asur. Afilu bitinok. Even with a baby, she'ein bar havana, who doesn't understand what's going on. They don't yet know what's going on. So can a woman indeed go to a hospital and have a baby? So he says, yes, she can. Umikol makam eishes kohen meuberes, the wife of a kohen who is pregnant. Okay? Shekarvu yameha laledet. And it's getting very close to her to give birth. We'll talk about before she's giving birth in a minute. Muteret likanes lechatchila ba'oyal hameis. She's allowed, certainly, lechatchila to go into an oyal hameis, an area where there is a Jewish dead body. Da'av shen nirulanu shevadai teile cham, even if we know she's definitely going to give birth there. She can give birth even in a place where there's a dead body. Because why? Shema yiyei zachar, even though it may be a boy, v'yitamei, and the boy will become Tamei Sham, afilu hachi mutar, is still mutar. Why? And this is fascinating. The sveik sveikahu. It is a sveik sveika. What is a sveik sveika? It is a double level of doubt. Shema yiye nikeva, maybe it'll be a girl, or maybe it'll be a boy. Veshema yiye nethel, and unfortunately, even if it's a boy, maybe it'll be a stillbirth. You never know. And therefore he says there's a sveik sveika, two levels of doubt. Yes. We'll get to today in about 30 seconds. Now, sveik sveika is a very common halachic concept. We see this, for example, I'm sure that people realize that if you by mistake use a milchik bowl for fleishik food, you took it out of the cupboard and you realize afterwards, oi, we've just used a milchik bowl for the fleishik food, is that a problem? Well, how do you know? You don't know if it was used in the last 24 hours or not. So there's a principle in halacha of Sam Kalim Einam Ben Yoimo, that most of the most Kalim are more than 24 hours since you used them. Why? How do you know that? So the Shach explains, again, it's a fake faker. Number one, I don't know when this vessel, this Kli was last used. Maybe it was within 24 hours. Maybe it was less, more than 24 hours. And even if it was used within 24 hours, I don't know how it was washed up. Was it washed up with detergent? Was it washed up without detergent? Meaning you put together multiple levels of suffix and it gets you out of a tight squeeze in certain situations. So the Mishnah Berurah says, so too here. I don't know whether it's a girl or a boy. And even if it's a boy, I don't know whether it's a healthy child or, God forbid, whether it's a stillbirth. Now, that's one thing 100 years ago. But what's today? Because first of all, today, thank God how many children are stillborn. It happens, unfortunately, but it's a rarity. Okay? Is that still a factor? And more so, you know the sex of the child. Sometimes. Meaning when we had our kids in England, they wouldn't tell us the sex of the child. They weren't allowed to tell you the sex of the child at that stage in England because they were worried that if people found out that they were girls, there were certain minorities that would want to terminate the pregnancies, etc. So they had a policy. We never knew until the birth what the sex of our child was. But in Israel, they certainly will tell you the sex of the child. They'll do an ultrasound, a sonogram, whatever, and they will tell you what the sex of your child is. So where does that leave Mrs. Cohen? Should she find out or should she not find out? Maybe you could argue that she dafka should find out because she needs to know if indeed the child is a boy. Now, what's she going to do about that if she knows? So we'll see about that in a minute, okay? But you could argue that she dafka shouldn't know. And it's better off that she shouldn't know because then you can preserve the sveik sveika. So how are we going to go with that? The truth is, this is beyond the scope of today's shiur, and it goes into the lomdus, really, of how sveik sveika works. Do we say that Sveika is just two different doubts? And of course, if I can resolve those doubts in some way, then I have an obligation to. I can find out whether the child is a boy or a girl, and then I can get rid of the Sveika, meaning Sveika is a kind of unfortunate situation, and if I can avoid it, I will. Or do we say, no, Sveika is just called nothing. A Sveika means there's so many doubts, it's basically permitted. If it's permitted, Shalom al Yisrael, and you don't have to worry about it. And there's obviously a lot of debate as to which way Sveika works. Yes?
What about the risk to the mother? I mean,
we'll get there in a second.
Most pregnancies are fine, but
okay, so let me address that now. Rabbi J. David Bleich takes a stringent view on the Sveika question and says that basically she needs to resolve the sophic if she can, and therefore she needs to have a sonogram and find out if it's a boy. Ah, now she knows it's a boy, can she go to the hospital? Yes, because he says for health reasons she can go to the hospital.
Why does she have to know?
Because there may be cases where actually the midwives tell them, you're better off not going to the hospital. Not everybody has a baby in the hospital, and not everybody should have a baby in the hospital, depending on who you ask. Okay, I'm not here to give, you know, antenatal advice, so please don't take it from me. People have children, grandchildren, and friends. There are people who will tell you that if you have a healthy, normal pregnancy, and there's no reason to have your baby in a hospital, it may be healthier for the child to have it outside the hospital. I'm not getting into that debate now, but at least if she knows it's a boy, and the doctors tell her, you know something, no reason for you to go to a hospital. Fantastic. So then I won't go to a hospital. Unless you say that every case you're better off in a hospital, and I'm not getting into that now. There are others that want to say, and this is very interesting, that actually this is not really a Sveika. Because it's not really balanced. It's not a Suffolk 50-50, this way, 50-50, that way. It's actually, this is really a rive. What does it mean, a rive? It's saying that the vast majority of children, or the majority of children, are not viable males. Because there's female children, and there's non-viable children, therefore the viable males are in a minority, so you can rely on the majority. Good. So why do I care whether it's rive or Sveika? I'll tell you why. Because when it comes to rive, you have different rules of engagement. Let's say you have a rive. Most clothes that you buy from Macy's or Marks & Spencer's or whatever do not have shatners in them. Let's assume that is true. I think that is true of Marks & Spencer's. I don't really know anything about Macy's, okay? I only bought a couple of silk ties there. Cheap stuff doesn't have it, correct. The better stuff has the linen in it, etc. So let's say you have a rive. So can you rely on the rive? The answer is, in principle, you can rely on the rive. Why get it checked? The answer is because once there's a miut hamatsui, a miut hamotsui means a significant minority, then you have an obligation to check. It's the same with vegetables. Let's say most vegetables of a certain type of vegetables are not infested. Only 20% are infested. Okay, so why don't just rely on the rive? Why check anything? Probably 80% chance it's fine. Rely on the rive. The answer is, since there is a miut hamotsui, let's say in this vegetable, a significant number, usually they say 10%, is a significant number, although that's debated, you have an obligation, at least rabbinically, to check. So here too, if there is a rove of babies who are not male viable kohanim, there is definitely a significant minority who are, and therefore, again, Rabbi Bleich and others would rule that you should check. However, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg says, like you said, better not to know. The Sveika basically says it's fine, you don't have to worry about it, and he advises that the wife is better off not knowing whether the baby is a child or not. There's actually an even a Cohen or not. It's only a child. Let's hope so. You pray that your kid will turn into a human being one day, and then you go from there.
That's a suffix.
A mere tamotzui there, Baruch Hashem. There are those who want to bring a nice proof for the lenient position from, remember the Gemara, the Mishnah we had last week in Para, where we said to produce those super tahor kids. What did they do? They brought women to give birth in special courtyards, and then they put the kids on the cows and all that. So one thing they didn't tell the women to do is, the minute you find out you're pregnant, run there and come to that place. They obviously weren't that worried about the fact that they were pregnant and they may be carrying a male Cohen. Which raises an interesting other question is it just the giving birth which is the problem, or is it a problem even for a woman who's pregnant, let's say way before she's giving birth, walking into a place which is tame? Now, there is a minhag, which is nothing to do with this at all, that pregnant women don't go onto a cemetery. That is really, it's nothing because of Tuma and Tara, it's really to do with mystical reasons, and people take this very seriously, and I'm not getting into, you know, where all these minhagim of, you know, this and that, and death-related minhagim, very fascinating. But leaving aside the minhag, which is a real minhag, is a woman concerned when she has a baby inside her, which is not coming out anytime soon, of Tuma? And that raises an interesting question, which is, and again, I want to raise this now, because if not now, when? Tuma Balua. What is Tuma Balua? Look in number 7 for a second. Balua means obviously absorb. Blua. Number 7. I'm a rabba. Rabba says in Cholin, Keshem she Tuma Balua eina matama. Just like Tuma, which is absorbed, doesn't generate tame. Tach tara blua, so too something pure which is absorbed, eino mikama, doesn't become tame. What is the case here? So the Mishnayos have a lots of rather gory cases of dogs wandering around. What happened if a dog ate human remains and then walked into your house? Your mishpachat kohen, and there's a dog that came from down there. Don't forget, bodies weren't always where they should have been back in the ancient world, and the dog ate some human remains and walked into your house. Is everyone now jumping up and down saying, oi, there's tumma in the house? The answer is no, relax, it's fine, because it's called tumma blua, the tumma is inside the dog, and everything's fine. As far as we're concerned, it doesn't do anything. What about the other way around? What if tahara blua? And the classic case is someone swallows a ring, or something like that, and then they walk into a place which is tame. So they become tame, but what about that ring? When nature takes its course and the ring once again reappears, do we now say that the ring is, oi, the ring was in a place which is tame, or do we say, no, the ring was inside you, and it doesn't get affected? And the answer is, the Gemara seems to say quite clearly that things which are in absorbed in something else, they're not affected. So most people hold that a pregnant woman has not got a concern of coming into a place which is tame, leaving aside the minhag of the cemetery, because it won't affect the baby at all. There are those who say, well, it's a big debate on this, I brought you footnotes. There are those who want to argue that while a baby is still a fetus, it still has the status of being part of the mother. We talked about that when we had shirim on abortion. If you remember back in the day, we had some shirim on abortion. Is a baby really part of the mother? In which case, it's a female, effectively, and therefore it doesn't have a problem with tumma at all. But that's one issue that they need to be thinking about. And the last thing I'm not going to get into now before we turn over the pages, if, God forbid, a woman is about to have a miscarriage, that's also a relevant issue for Kohanim. And obviously a Kohen has an obligation to assist his wife if she needs him, if there's any element of danger for the wife, for sure. But once the wife is out of danger and the Kohen doesn't need to be there, if, God forbid, she miscarries a child, then he can't be there when she does that, because that's obviously a source of tumma as well. Yes?
Is there a difference between a baby that's born at 8 months or 9 months?
No, it's a dead child after 40 days that is considered to be a human. There are differences in halacha, but for this not. Once the baby is more than 40 days, they're gestated, then it is called a baby. And obviously, it goes without saying, a Kohen can be present at a healthy birth of his wife's child, of his child, etc. That's fine. Go over the page, please, to page 4. Two other issues before we talk about doctors. Why can't they just run in the hospital and close the doors and hope for the best if there's tumor? Why does that not necessarily work? And I want to introduce you to some issues of Tuma and Tara, where just closing the doors won't necessarily help. This is a relevant question for Kohanim generally. If there's a Kohen in your building, and unfortunately somebody dies in the building, what should the Kohen do? I actually have a book here, which I just wanted to show you, if you may be interested. I picked this up a few years ago. This is an English translation of a much more extensive book in Hebrew. It's called here in English, The Kohen's Handbook. Okay, very handy little book there by a fellow called Yochanan Alexander Lombard, Rabbi Lombard, sorry. And it has, you know, drawings and diagrams of different people who get themselves in different situations. If you're a Kohen and this is the kind of thing that you need to prepare for, then I suggest that you buy something like this. But what should the Kohen do? So one obvious answer is run inside a room and shut all the doors. But that doesn't always work. First of all, and I'm not getting into the nanotechnology of this, sometimes doors do not block tumma, and it may make a difference as to what kind of hinges they're hung on. And I'm not getting into all of that now, because some of you are just going to roll your eyes to the ceiling and say, as people sometimes say to me, come on. But the answer is, halacha is detailed. Just pick up the chumash. forget about the Gemara. Open the Chumash and read what the Chumash has to say about Tumah and Tahara. It's obviously that Kodesh Baruch Hu does care about the details on these issues and many others as well. But the hinges are perhaps relevant, whether they're multi-purpose hinges which are less blocking of Tumah because they're not bottled to the door, or whether they're door hinges. If you're interested in that, I brought you a whole footnote on it. But also, and perhaps more applicably, if that's a word, there is the issue of soif Tumah latzeis, and this is a real halachic issue. What does soif tumah latzeis mean? It means that if there is a body in a building, and that body will be carried out of the building at some point to go to a funeral, then not only the place where the body is now is tamei, certainly on the Torah level, but anywhere where that body will be brought on the way out of the building, even though the doors and windows may be locked tight shut now, since that body will be exiting along that route has a din of tumah, certainly on a rabbinic level and according to others, even on a Torah level as well. If there are multiple possible routes, then all of those routes are tameh until we can ascertain that the body can't go out that way. Obviously, if there's a body in a room and there's a door out and there's a mirpeset onto a balcony, the mirpeset's not a problem because you ain't taking the body out that way because it's just a mirpeset. But if the body could go out of the door, then that is an issue. And therefore, a Kohen who is in a place, in a building, in a hospital, in an apartment, whatever it is, where there is a body there, it's not just good enough to run to a place and shut the door. Because if that is a place that the body could be brought, i.e. a stairwell or something like that, then that's a problem. He can't go there. Even to the point, look at the Shulchan Aruch in number 8. Shulchan Aruch passes this concept of soif tumah latzeis, chaser hamukefet zizim va'achsadros, a chaser, a courtyard which has little ledges and balconies going off from it, utumah ve'echad mehabatim, and there's tumah in one of the houses, im kol pitchei abatim v'chalones ne'ulim, even though the doors and windows may be closed, the tumah still goes out under these ledges and under these balconies because these are places that the mace could be brought. And the Ramah clarifies the hatam. The reason is mishum dehoil v'soif hatumah latzed derech sham. Since the body could indeed be brought out that way, ro'in keilu yatzah. We look at it as though it's already on the way out, and that is a din everybody agrees upon. And he even says, this is more of a chumrah. Can the Kohen, on a day that they know that there's going to be a funeral in the town, can they even walk through the town gate? Because the town gate is going to have a mace brought through it later today. He says, there are many people who allow that. The hamekel lo hitzed, if you're makel, that's fine. But makem shiloi nagul achmir, logs that not a minag to be machmir. But in a building, everybody is machmir. And therefore, people need to know about this. What does that mean? That means if you're not in a place where they're Kohen friendly, we'll get to that in a minute, doors should be kept shut, if possible, and windows. And that might not necessarily even help if there's a body that's going to be taken, out. They do say, by the way, that Kohenim, that non-Kohenim, even if they're going into a Jewish hospital, should be very careful to keep doors shut and windows shut, because you could impact upon a Kohen. If there is a mace in the building and you go to knock on the Kohen's door to inform them that there's a mace in the building, it could be that knocking on the door is not the best solution, because the minute they open the door and say yes, then you've just caused exactly the problem that you were trying to avoid. So maybe send them an SMS, or make a phone call, or shout through the door, don't open the door. And windows can be a problem as well. Let me give you just an example without getting into more details. Let's say there is a mace in a room, okay? And there is a window in that to the outside. And there's nothing outside. There's just a drop, a 20-foot drop. So what could be wrong with opening the window? Well, I'll tell you. Let's say at the top of the building there's a large ledge, which is a tefach wide that forms an ohel, at the top of the building that no one's even thought of. So if you open the window, so the tumah will go out through the window and then become caught in that ohel, and then if Mr. Cohen upstairs has his window open as well, it goes straight in through his window. So, you know, if you're interested in more details on this, you can go into this. What's that? Yeah, it's something like that. So if you're a Cohen, please check this out in advance. again, running outside on the balcony may seem like a brilliant solution, but it will, you won't be happy once it starts raining and they tell you you can't come in because inside is also a problem. So work this out in advance. Add can hospitals and apartment blocks, but these are real halakha l'maaseh issues. What about doctors? Before we get to doctors, by the way, there's always a couple of people after this kind of shir that come up to me and say to me, does God really care about what kind of hinges I put on my door, multi-purpose hinges or door hinges? And the truth is, that is a very, very important question, which we really need to have something of a shir on in terms of the hashkafic philosophical understanding of the purpose of detail in halacha. That is actually a very, very important question. And not a trivial question at all, which I'm not going to address now because this is not the shir for it, but I just want to say that I feel that is an important question, and we do need to have a look at it in terms of the philosophy of what halacha is really for and why details make a difference and what level of detail should we be bothered about. And we are very detail-oriented. You know, when people say to me things like, well, the halacha argues about everything, I say to them, no, it doesn't. It really doesn't. No one argues which day Shabbos is. Shabbos is on Saturday. No one argues you have to light candles. You have to light candles. Everyone agrees. No one argues you have to light candles on Friday afternoon. Everyone agrees. Just think how much we agree on. What do we disagree on? So there's a whole Perek of Mishnah. What kind of candles? What kind of wicks? What kind of oil? So most religions, if you said to them, light a candle, light a candle. If they ask you, what kind of candle? What kind of wicks? What kind of oil? This big, this, they look at you as though you were mad. They're like, just light a candle, whatever you like. So we obviously don't think that way because there are candles and there are candles. And in that particular situation, it's very important what kind of candle you light, because if you light a candle that's going to flicker and go out, you might be tempted to play with it and break Shabbos, etc., etc. So details are really critical. The expression, which is in English, the devil is in the detail, is actually a very Christian expression. It's a very Christian expression which sees law detail as somehow a distraction from the way to heaven, okay, which is a very Christian narrative, which was an anti-legal narrative for all sorts of reasons, but that's another discussion. Maybe we'd say God is in the details, not the devil is in the details, but that's another discussion for another time. Now, let's talk about doctors. Any doctors here? One doctor here. There was another gentleman who's a doctor who wanted to get this online, so hopefully he'll listen to it as well. Can you be a doctor if you're a Kohen? Well, we already talked about the fact that doctors are obligated to save life and go into hospital, so once you are a doctor, then it's very much more straightforward. Although, again, going into hospitals for non-essential purposes, there are posts that are going to discuss that, yes or no. But training to be a doctor is the key. Because to train to be a doctor, you usually need to do anatomy, and that is a major halakhic problem. Go over the page to page 5, please. Let's look at a couple of very fascinating shuvahs. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein. Some years ago, some decades ago, a pamphlet came out and was doing the rounds in Manhattan about the deal for Kohenim to be trainee doctors, yes or no. And Rav Shimon Schwab got hold of this pamphlet and sent it to Rav Moshe Feinstein and said, I'd like to know what you think about this. At first, Rav Moshe refused to open it and says, I'm not interested because it's osa. And look at what he says, number 9. Hinei be'asher she'adava hu poshet. It's so posh and borrowed. Kol tach she'asa le'kohen li tamei le'meis. A kohen can't become tamei for a meis. U'mufursam ze b'chola olam. Everybody knows this. Asher al kol pashut u'baru she'afilu im yavo g'doy le'olam. Even if the greatest people in the world were to come v'yomru la'hakel and tell me you're allowed to do it, ein shomim lahem. You can't listen to them. This is an established minhag and fact. Because we know already, even to be strict, you don't go against Gedolei Gedolim, the greatest poskim in the world, if it's against an established minhag. I'm a rabbi. Im yavo Eliyahu v'yomer ein choltim b'sandal. This is yibum. Even if Eliyahu Anovi came and said you're not allowed to do yibum with a sandal, ein shomim. We don't listen even to Eliyahu Anovi. Shikfar nagu ha'am b'sandal, because the meaning of the people is to allow to do chalitza with a sandal. Says Rav Moshe, pashut she'ena kavona shi'yomer al pi nevuah. It's obvious that Eliyahu is not coming to tell you through nevuah da'af hachra katana i'esh al pi nevuah, because a novi is not allowed to paskan halacha on the basis of nevuah. Even small things, the loy b'shamayim hi, the elam mitzvot, etc. She'ein novi rishay l'chadish b'divrei Torah. You can't do that. You can't use Nevuah. So when it says Eliyahu is going to come and tell us something, he doesn't mean as a Navi. By the way, in parentheses, that itself is a big debate as to whether a Navi was or wasn't able to use Nevuah to pasken halacha. Fascinating discussion. Rav Moshe comes very firmly down on the Rambam side that he couldn't, but it's not poshut. Ve'im kein b'hechel she'apeirushu im yavo Eliyahu v'yom elanu al pi chokhmasai. It must be that Eliyahu is going to come as a Rav, not as a Navi. Ugudulaso, and use his chokma b'tayra, eich sha'adin, okay, husha ein chosin b'sandal, how the din is that you can't use a sandal, ein shomim loy, mitam shikfan nagu b'sandal. So I wouldn't even listen to Eliyahu Anavi. I'm certainly not going to listen to this pamphlet, whoever wrote it. Kol shikain shaloy shayach lismoch al eze adam, shemoyre lahakil b'tumas koinim machmashen kvar tami meis. And here Rav Moshe gives away what his problem is. He is worried that this pamphlet's going to come along and say it's not a problem for Kohanim to do anatomy, to be training doctors. Why? Because they're already Tamei anyway. And Rav Moshe says, I'm not even interested in taking that forward because everybody knows that ain't you choli nitaher. And now he's going to say you can't become Tahor. That's not an argument. Shelachein ein tzorich af livdok mihu mechaber hakuntrus hazeh. I don't even need to check who wrote this kuntrus. Sha'af im hayatam et chochem. Ein a klum. Meaning, Rav Moshe's first assumption is that he's going to come along and use the argument that the Kohanim don't have to worry because they're already Tameh and they can't now become Tahor. And we talked about that last week, right? We said it was a machloikus between the Rambam and the Raivat. The Rambam said, even if you're already Tameh, it's still prohibited min HaTorah to become again in contact with the dead. And the Raivat seemed to say something that indicated that it was less of a problem, whether he said it's not a problem or just less of a problem. But Rav Moshe is not interested. He says, we do not paskin like the Raivad. If that's what this kuntrus is trying to say, I'm not even interested in opening it. But actually, that's not what the kuntrus was trying to say. And eventually they persuaded Rav Moshe to open it, and he opened it, and he read it, and he said, aha, that's not the argument they're using. They're using another argument, and I don't like that one either. Look at number 10. Aval iyanti ba kuntrus. In the end, in the same tshuva Rav Moshe writes, I did open the kuntrus, the pamphlet. Shehu atmo gam kein masik she'ein lahafik kohen af bizman azeri tabel emesim. And indeed, he was happy to see that the author did come down on the side that Kohanim cannot become tamei because they're already tamei. Good. Aval matir mitzad acher. But he allowed Kohanim to learn to be doctors because of another factor, which is pikuach nefesh. Surely, even if you're not allowed to become Tamei, it's Bikuach Nefesh to become a doctor, and therefore Bikuach Nefesh overrides the existing prohibition on becoming Tamei. Says Rav Moshe, V'zehu shtus v'hevel, sheloi nitzen lebar da'as loi meklau. He doesn't agree. He says, this is complete and utter nonsense, Bikuach Nefesh. She'af im loy haya shum roifa ba'olam. Even if there was no other doctor in the world, says Rav Moshe. Lekachiv mitzav bikuach nefesh lilmod chokhmas harfuah. You're going to tell me bikuach nefesh is an imperative halachically to become a doctor? Dehachiv de bikuach nefesh ikul kol adam. She'yatul chaveru b'mashi yochol. The bikuach nefesh means if you can rescue a person here and now in front of you, lefaneinu, you must. She'im hu roifa, if indeed he is a doctor, b'chuyim lahatzil choy lemechalel. Of course he's obligated. No one questions whether a Kohen who is a doctor has an obligation to save someone's life. What if they die in the process? Okay, what can you do? You have to try. He has a chiv b'kuach nefesh. Avaleik a chiv she'il m'chokmas harafuah. No one ever suggested you have to learn to be a doctor. Kidei lahatzil choy lemechalel, so you can save people. U'kamoy she'betzdaka, like with tzdaka. She'im yesh lo adam mammon, if you've got money to give. Mechuyav liten tzedakah, you have to give tzedakah. Avalei kechiyav ala adam la'asoyt mischarim, you don't have to go into business. Lehit asher, to become a wealthy person, kedei liten tzedakah. Get everybody out of whatever they're doing and get them all onto, you know, Wall Street. Get them all to earn lots of money so they can give tzedakah. That's not how it works halachically. It may not be a bad idea for some people, but it's not halach. Aval levad zeh, apart from that, he says, ki chaseirim roisim ba'olam. Are we short of doctors? Maybe yes. Okay? Maybe short of doctors, Jewish doctors. V'loi shayach af l'tas. You shouldn't even make this mistake. Of course, the answer clearly is in terms of this alone, if you want from Jewish doctors and their Kohanim and there's a problem, the answer is to get the women to become doctors. And you can have from Jewish Kohanim doctors who are women, because they don't have a problem with this. So that's obviously a separate issue. So he's not interested in that at all. And even though he says in number 11, there were great people in the past who were Kohanim and doctors, and I brought you in the footnotes, even in Chazal, there were various people, Rabbi Ishmael, Shmuel, who were Kohanim and doctors. He says you can't learn from that, because back in the day they didn't have to study anatomy. They learned doctoring, physician, to be physicians out of textbooks. Anatomy only came much later. Somewhere around the 18th century, anatomy became a standard part of medical training. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, these days, you cannot be a doctor. You cannot learn to be a, study to be a doctor because of the issue of Tumas Meis. Now, that's Rav Moshe's position. We'll get to a couple of other positions before we finish. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, over to the last place, please. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman was asked about a young medical student in Germany, whether he was allowed to get an aliyah on Shabbos, because he was studying medicine, and he was a Kohen. Are we allowed to call this guy up? And look at what he said. Sheila, he says, number 12. Im chuiva rav la'asol likrot l'torah, Kohen shelomed chokhmat harafua, is the rav obligated to prevent an aliyah from this Kohen who is studying medicine? Shebevadai matame le'meisim vashko minituach. Because of doing anatomy, he's going to have to be matame mason. And he basically, you know, I'll summarize it in short. He goes through and he says, look, if the guy really doesn't realize, or he thinks it's pikuach nefesh or whatever, and he's a shoigeg, meaning he doesn't realize really what the problem is, then maybe you don't have to criticize him. Mutav shiyu shoigegim v'lo yiyu mezidim. There is a principle when it comes to tochacha. Sometimes when people are doing things wrong and they don't realize quite how wrong it is, it's better to not intervene, so at least they'll do it for shogeg, because even if you tell them, he's not going to stop studying medicine. He says, this guy's not going to say, oh, I never realized, I'll go and study law instead. Okay, assuming law is a safe halakhic profession, which is not clear in and of itself. Okay, but he says he's not going to change, and therefore maybe it's better to leave him be. He says, if he's still in the middle of anatomy and he's going to come to Motzei Shabbos Sunday morning and he's going to go back to the dead bodies, he says, maybe that's a problem. Maybe you can't, you know, like, in public call up a person who is actively breaking Torah. But then he says at the end, it's a lovely line, he says, but if the gabbai of the shul won't listen to the rav either, okay, then there's a different bunch of halachos. It's really funny because, like, even back in the day, there were congregants who didn't listen to the rav, and there were honorary officers who didn't listen to the rav as well. And he goes through the back and forth. The Chasam Sofer says that a Kohen is allowed to learn to be a doctor if he can guarantee that he won't have to get into anatomy. There may be more of an opening for that in the future. At the moment, I don't know exactly, but it's pretty difficult, as far as I'm aware, to study anywhere a serious medical course and avoid anatomy. If maybe the medical student was given a cast iron written guarantee that you will not have to do anatomy, and they could rely on that, then maybe there's, you know, room to go forward. But the question is, could they rely on that? And how will you train a doctor without doing anatomy? You're going to train them on plastic models? Well, you know, thank you very much, but if someone's going to do an operation on me, I'd rather they had done anatomy than trained on plastic, not models. But maybe the models will be so good, maybe one day we'll do it all on holograms, and it'll be 3D printers, and who knows what's going to be. And it may well be that there are going to be openings to do medicine, to learn medicine without anatomy. But at the moment, while there's still anatomy, pretty much all the poskim are against. Yes. Yeah, but it doesn't matter because you're touching them. Once it's masa and maga, it's not a problem. It's a problem even for the Kohanim. An organ from a live body is not a problem, but these are dead bodies, which is a problem. There is a rumor that Rav Herzog allowed Kohanim to study medicine in order to, there will be Jewish doctors in the land of Israel, building up Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael. However, that is a rumor, and it's not substantiated in writing. I only mention it as a rumor because Fred Rosner, in one of his books on medical ethics, also mentions it, and I figured if he mentions it, he's the bocky on these things, and also Rabbi Moshe Tendler in that book, so if they mention it, I'll mention it, but they say you can't rely on it. Dental school is another question. Won't help. Because you'll be moving it around, and that's going to be masa. Even if you're not touching it, you're going to be causing it to move. You can't. The plastic gloves won't answer all the qual problems. Dental school may be an issue if you're having to deal with real skulls and dentition, you know, dentition in the skulls. But you can get away with that more easily at dental school. And usually dentists don't deal with dead patients as much as doctors do. Hopefully, if they do, you want to change a dentist quick. And the last thing that I would mention is museums. Museums can be a problem. There are museums that house human remains, and mummies and daddies, and you need to work out what the issues are, whether it's a problem, whether you can rely on the opinion that it's not a problem with non-Jewish corpses, but they didn't say it's not a problem at all. It's only in a situation of need, and you'll have to weigh that up. So I think we've learned a lot about Tumah and Tahara, Baruch Hashem. Next week I want to go to other things. I want to turn a little bit to the environment, to climate change. Because we're moving towards Tu B'Shvat. And Tu B'Shvat is a time when we need to think a little bit about that. So next week I want to talk a little bit about certain issues in terms of the country and rain and the climate and the halachas and hashkafas of how that works. Do a couple of sessions on that, and then after Tu B'Shvat we'll move on to other fields. Animals are no problem. Dead animals are no problem at all, Pekonin. So you want to do anatomy on an animal? Okay. Again, I prefer that my doctor works on human beings. Rabbi, let's just touch the...